Hey there! Welcome to Dogs Are Smarter Than People, the quirky podcast that brings you writing tips and life tips. I'm Sean, and with me, as always, is Carrie Jones, New York Times and international best-selling author and awesome woman.
I'm also Sean's wife, so he has to say that. We always start our podcast with a random thought, and then we go into the writing tip and the dog tip. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Enjoy!
Hey, welcome to Random Thought in the Office.
Hey, baby.
Carrie is sick edition.
Yeah, but you sound much better, luckily. Okay. Did we do a podcast last week, or was that our...
Yeah, we did. It was Carrie is sick edition number one.
Oh, did you sound a lot worse last Sunday?
I think I had a lot of heavy breathing, like...
That's pretty normal when you're around me.
Anyways.
Yes.
Do you want to hear what I found on the interwebs?
Of course I do.
Okay.
Might be the most interesting part of my day.
Oh my gosh, that's so sad. Ready?
Yes.
So, there was a mysterious, an adorable, super huge, giant rubber duck in the bay of Belfast in Maine, which is not very far from where we are. And the giant rubber ducky had the word joy on it.
Was it a yellow rubber ducky?
Yes, it's a giant yellow rubber ducky.
Oh man, look at that thing.
And we'll have a link to the article about it on NECN.com. But it mysteriously appeared. It also mysteriously disappeared. And people were really, really sad that it was gone.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so according to the article on NECN, the massive bathtub rubber ducky that appeared all of a sudden in Belfast, Maine last week disappeared Saturday evening after becoming both a hit on the harbor and the internet. Dozens of people walking around the harbor master's office on Tuesday, around nude, said out loud that they were disappointed that the duck was no longer there. "I'm a Mainer. I wanted to see that big duck," said Betty Segal of Mechanic Falls, who was visiting Belfast with friends on Tuesday. "It's not going to be as exciting," said Joan Smith of Rochester, New Hampshire, also in Segal's group.
Oh, I wonder what happened to the ducky.
I know. So there's a sign on the Harbor Master's office bulletin board, right?
Yeah.
And it says that the ducky was an anonymous was a gift from, quote, anonymous Bennequackers who live in the land of misfit toys, USA.
That's funny.
Yeah. And it said that Joy was indeed her name and that she is... identifies as a female, and that her presence was, quote, "in an age of such bitter divisiveness in our country, a reminder of our commonalities." So they just want to make people happy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Isn't that adorable?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also said that she had to leave because it's almost duck hunting season.
Oh. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. yeah. Somebody did see it during a trip to Islesboro, which is an island that some of our friends live on. And it was in Crow Cove, but it had tipped over. So Joy was still there. She was just a little, maybe she had a little bit too much partying in Belfast and, you know.
Got a little tipsy.
Yeah. Isn't that the best thing ever?
It is. That's really cool.
I know. I love it. Speaking of cool.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that there is a London YouTuber?
I can imagine there is.
Who claims to have been abducted by aliens.
I can imagine that too.
And fallen in love with one of them.
What?
Yes. There's an article that will link in allthatsinteresting.com by Kalina Fraga. And it says, "Sick of men on Earth, London actress Abby Bella says that she hopes to normalize interspace dating." I'm sorry, interspecies dating. This woman looks like the lady in The White Lotus.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Does,
yeah.
She?
She's like a lot of blonde, a lot of boob, a lot of skin showing, and a lot of eyebrow.
I love her gold glittery foily cheesy YouTube background.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it says, to quote... Here's a quote from the article. "To find her soulmate, London actress Abby Bella looked to the skies. She claims that she fell for an alien after it swept her into its UFO and right off her feet. Bored by the pandemic and unimpressed by the offerings on Earth, Bella explained that she joked online about wanting an alien to abduct me. Before long, she began to have dreams of a white light. And then on May 31st, Bella says she heard a voice in her dream. It commanded her to wait in the usual spot. Bella had never heard the voice before, and yet she knew what it meant. The next evening, I sat next to my open window, Bella said. She waited, and as she began to fall asleep around 12:15 a.m., a flying saucer swept into view. Before Bella knew it, she wasn't in her bedroom anymore. There was a bright green beam that transported me to the UFO. Most might be alarmed by such a turn of events, but not Bella. I'm one of those people who all my life had weird encounters, she explained on YouTube channel. So there are five little alien people in there, but they were tall and very skinny.
Yeah.
She couldn't make out their true form, she said. But they telepathically told her that she wasn't ready to see their true form. And she said, but it seemed like they had a green hue and big black eyes with human features like eyebrows.
Interesting.
And she drew a sketch. And she wasn't scared. She was love-struck. There was one who connected with me, she gushed, describing the feeling as being in love times 100. I didn't get his name, but I felt exactly the same.
Yeah, when's she going to be able to see him again?
I don't know. She doesn't even know how to tell him down. Like, she doesn't know his name.
Right.
Like, you know.
He's probably not on Facebook.
And he said that she had to consent to go with them, but she didn't want to say yes in case they took her forever.
Oh.
So she spent 20 minutes in there, and then she like went back to Earth, and she said aliens offer, quote, an extra quality of care. And again, from the article, men on Earth just tell lies and have double standards. I'm really impressed that she knows all that about the alien men.
After just 20 minutes?
Yeah, man, that's a very, very full 20 minutes to make a lot of...
Maybe he was just good in the sack for 20 minutes.
Oh my God. She wants to be a pioneer. And normalize interplanetary love.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, man.
As long as they're paying for the gas, I guess.
There's been a lot more UFO sightings during the pandemic.
Yeah?
Dude, is it all about money to you? They're paying for the gas?
Yeah.
You think UFOs use gas?
It's not, well, that's a, you know, a very general joke. But basically, I'm not going to jump in my truck and go visit my interplanetary significant other.
Well, let's pretend I live in New Hampshire and you live in Maine. Would you not pay for the gas to come visit me?
Of course I would. That's different.
Why?
Because it's not
two different
millions
planets
of miles.
Made in New Hampshire. What?
It's not millions of miles. While it may be interspecies dating,
<So mean. laughs>
it's not intergalactic. Writing tip of the pod.
Yeah, so this podcast, we're going to talk about the very sexy world of interplanetary love. No, I wish you were.
That would be exciting, but we don't have much to go on.
I know. Well, all we need is 20 minutes, apparently.
Apparently.
Which is way more than two.
Yeah, but I bet the sex is pretty good.
You didn't get my joke, man.
Oh, were you? Was that about me?
No.
Oh, my word. That's all the time you'll afford to me, my love.
I'm a busy woman. All right, so this is about subtext. And if you just heard my conversation with Sean, there was some subtext there, right?
That was more like subconscious text.
Well, that's kind of subtext,
right in,
man.
You slid it right under my consciousness.
So one of my writers was like, can you talk about this soon with our class? Because... they were like, I just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, and then they were like, I think a lot of people don't get it. And so we're going to start off with some nice definitions of subtext that Shawnee's going to read. Hopefully not too slowly, because it'll be a very long podcast, because these are very long definitions. Because I'm too sick to do much talking. Ready?
All right.
So masterclass defines subtext as...
in day-to-day life, there are often wide gaps between what people say and what they are thinking. These gaps can collectively be referred to as subtext, and they are valuable territory for fiction writers. Ernest Hemingway, who relied on subtext in his minimalistic approach to writing, even coined a term for it, the iceberg theory. He believed deeper meanings of character and plots live below the surface of the text, just as the bulk of an iceberg floats beneath the surface of the water.
So, that's kind of helpful. But here, let's get a little more helpful. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
And this one is from the beautiful dictionary, Merriam-Webster.
All right. A literary text often has more than one meaning. The literal meaning of the words on the page and their hidden meaning. What exists between the lines. The subtext. Arthur Miller's play, The Crucible, for example, is about the Salem witchcraft trials of the 17th century, but its subtext is a comparison of those trials with the witch hunts of the 1950s, when many people were unfairly accused of being communists. Even a social conversation between a man and a woman may have a subtext, but you may have to listen fairly closely to figure out what it is.
Unless it's us.
Yeah. Don't confuse subtext with subplot. A less important plot that moves along in parallel with the main plot.
So there are also different types of subtext, which is defined by LiteraryNet. That's where we're taking these definitions because I was too sick to think them out myself.
Well, that's okay. Yeah,
I know. All right. So privileged subtext. What, boo?
Let somebody else do the work
for you. Yeah, man. So privileged subtext is the first kind.
Privileged subtext is subtext in which the audience has certain privileges over the characters in a narrative. In other words, the audience is aware of something the characters are not aware of. For example, imagine a character who has 3 missed calls from her mother. Ooh.
Uh-oh.
We, as readers, cringe as we know she is about to find out her sister has been in a car crash, which we have seen, but she is not yet aware of.
So, subtext type number one, privilege. All right. Subtext type number 2, revelation.
Revelation subtext is subtext that reveals a certain truth over time throughout a story, leading up to a revelation. For example, imagine a boy who's been trying to figure out what he wants to do when he grows up. He considers firefighting, but being a policeman, cool, or even being an actor. Throughout his childhood, though, he enjoys drawing, painting, and sculpting for fun. The revelation subtext here is that his hobby has been his calling all along. He will become an artist.
3.
Sounds like somebody I know.
It sounds like our daughter. 3. Subtext through promise.
Subtext through promise is subtext in which an audience expects certain promises to be kept by the author. In other words, the audience expects the story to run as stories usually do. The audience expects a plot that makes sense and is weaved together. Characters who have revelations and change meaningfully, and symbols and motifs which make sense and suit the story. When an author fails to please the audience in this way, the story is considered poorly written or disappointing due to the subtext.
And then finally,
subtext through questions. Subtext through questions is subtext created when readers and audiences have questions about a story, such as how a plot is developing or what a character will do. Naturally, such questions arise in a well-written story as a form of unwritten subtext.
Somehow, literaryterms.net failed to talk about the subtext that most of us think about, which is the one that are defined in Masterclass and Merriam-Webster. And that's the space in between things, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm going to explain it right now.
All right.
So, as human beings, we do subtext all the time in real life, too. Like, we'll know something about one of our friends. Like, oh, they're cheating and their wife doesn't know. And, like watch all their interactions until the wife finally knows or husband finally knows, right? That's a kind of subtext. But we also have it in our conversations, right? We argue with our spouses about the proper way to put the dishes in the dishwasher, but what we're really arguing about is how one of us called the other one a dork or something, or is resenting that nobody appreciates them. In a lot of our lives, we have to infer the meaning of things underneath the words that people say or the actions that they do.
Very common.
Yes. So why do we want this subtext stuff in our stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like showing versus telling, which we've talked about in the podcast before, right? If you tell someone, I am angry, it's not as cool as showing them in the story with the clenched fists and the like huffing around and bending over and hulking over someone kind of anger, right? so, right?
Mm-hmm.
Showing versus telling. And then subtext is almost like this deeper level of showing. So it allows the reader to make connections and learn about the characters and their yearnings and their motivations and their wants without yelling, "Hey, my name is Sean and I want is the sex."
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it's underneath. It's not written there, but you can get that it's there, right? It's like this magical, mysterious, invisible force that you give clues to.
Mine's not that far underneath.
No, yours is not. you're in the telling part for that one. So, subtext is actually really sexy. It's the driving force behind some parts of your story. It's the blank space where readers get to have the aha moment by themselves. It's the epiphany your reader gets to have rather than you saying, "Yo, reader, he's longing here. Look at Sean Long."
That's be my name, Sean Long. That's my porn name, Sean Long.
Oh, my Lord.
Anyway.
So it's almost like a continuum, right?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what my porn name is? So it's supposed to be your first pet in the street you lived up on, lived on as a child.
Oh, yeah.
So mine would be Muffin Hardy.
Oh, that's a good one for you.
I know.
Or,
no, I don't. And I was also, my other street was Muffin Southgate.
Well, that's a whole nother,
that's like
that's a whole
nother
genre right there.
All right, so anyways, subtext is like a continuum. Show is better than tell, and subtext might be greater than showing, right? So we got that, right?
Yes.
Subtext is invisible, but real, kind of like the air. You need it to survive if you're a writer. Why? Because it makes the reader participate in the scene rather than just read the scene. Their brains are turned on, like Sean. How cool is that? And they get to interpret things.
And that, I was just going to ask you about that there.
Yeah.
About it, because it actually engages the reader.
Yeah,
it lets
man.
Them use their intelligence yeah. and their brain.
Yeah.
And I guess the skill is to actually make all readers be able to get the clues, right?
Right.
Okay.
And there are some stories with no subtext. Very popular.
Really?
I think 50 Shades of Grey is pretty lacking of subtext. But
That doesn't need any subtext.
All right. So anyways, if you want subtext, you can build it into your story by...
Number one, understanding their characters and what they really want and are motivated by.
You can't show subtext if you don't know what the subtext is.
That's right.
So you got to know your characters.
Number two, thinking about ways that characters can talk around what it is they want. If Sean wants sex and says, "I want sex," then there is no subtext. If he never mentions sex while trying to get it, then you've got subtext.
Yeah. So, three.
Number three, show the characters' wants and the subtext through emotion rather than explicit dialogue. If Sean stares longingly at two people canoodling in a car, that shows his want is in the subtext.
Yeah, man. And four.
Double meanings and evasions. When people are talking and there's more than one way to interpret something, that can be subtext. When they refuse to talk about something, or when they turn away every time a certain someone comes in a room, that can be subtext.
Right. Like, if you never say, "Oh my God, I hate Carrie."
Right.
But every time Carrie comes in the room, you turn away.
Yeah.
Or you refuse to make eye contact with Carrie and that writer writes that.
Yeah.
That's subtext, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the reader's like, "Ooh, he's turning away every time she goes in the room. Ooh, he's refusing to make eye contact. Ooh."
Mm.
You know?
I do.
If every time Carrie comes in the room and you hide the front of your pants... That could be a different kind of subtext.
Show long in the house.
Uh-huh. So in order to have subtext, you need to give your characters the things they want. Like you have to, give them things that they will want, like that they want to have, right? They may not realize that they want have these wants, whatever it is that they do want. But you, the all-knowing writer, do know what they want, right?
I hope so.
And then thinking about that means that you need to give your characters something they don't want other people to know right then if they know themselves that they have a want. Like a lot of times, subtexts are secrets.
Yeah.
Secrets are sexy.
Uh-huh.
And that's our whole writing tip of the pot. Subtext
is sexy.
Yeah, man. Like Sean Long.
Dog tip for life.
So Shawnee has a dog tip for life this week.
Yeah.
Because he's Shawnee. And Shawnee, what is the dog tip?
The dog tip for life is it's okay to be subtle sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to expand on that, or is that good enough?
Well, I'm trying to think of an example. Usually it works out better for me if Carrie's leaning over the counter looking sexy rather than walking up and just squeezing her butt.
Oh, my word.
If I kind of walk up behind, gently give her a hug, whisper sweet nothings in her ear, then kiss the back of her neck, and then grab her butt. Usually goes better.
I think there's still... You're still grabbing the butt, babe. There's still no, like...
I know, but once I work you up to it...
That's not subtext,
but the problem is that takes up, like, a good 45 seconds of my allotted 2 minutes. So...
No, all right.
He agrees with me, really, but his thing is, he's like, I don't have time to be subtle. It's like, no, I'm just going to drool on the floor get my treat.
All right, I'm going to tell you. When Sparty comes over to my chair because he wants a treat,
yeah,
and he keeps hitting my chair.
Yeah.
And, like, hitting it and hitting it and hitting it because he's like, I want a treat.
Right.
Not subtle. And what do? I don't give him a treat because he's being too darn demanding, right?
Yeah. But same thing with me.
When Sparty looks at me adoringly mm-hmm. and then looks over at the pantry and doesn't explicitly say anything
mm-hmm.
or hit me, I'm going to give him the treat. There's a power in the subtext and the subtlety, right?
For the dog.
And for the husband.
When we're down here in the office and I look at you adoringly and then look upstairs towards the bedroom, it doesn't do crap for me.
And I have new books out, and I'm teaching some classes at the Writing Barn. So if you want to hang out more with us, you know, just head on over to the carriejonesbooks.blog and we'll hook you.
Chill.
Well, chill, man.
Hey, don't forget to like, subscribe, and what's the other thing?
Share.
Share. Ooh, that's an important one.
Like, subscribe, share, and love each other.
Love each other. Love your way through it. Peace.
Peace.